Yeah. Craig is here. Hopefully he actually records properly this time. He actually cut out about a minute last week.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Is this... Are you awake?
No, what? I wasn't sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah, Craig, wake him up. Take him behind the woodshed.
There is no woodshed. There is only nap.
You don't get a nap until we're done with this podcast, and after that you can sleep until the cows come home, as it were.
Yay, cows.
Yeah, what? I like cows.
What am I doing here?
We're recording a podcast about probably Dungeons & Dragons this week, or tabletop games in general, because I don't talk a lot of D&D.
Who are we?
I don't know. You tell me this week.
I'm Grumpy Dungeon Master Christopher.
I'm also Grumpy Dungeon Master Christopher.
I am suffering from level 4 exhaustion. I need a long rest and some con saves to make it out of this.
Yeah, you definitely are suffering from exhaustion, because that's what happens when you go LARPing.
Yep. I made myself some cream of chicken for dinner. My wife said the chicken is bad. I think it wasn't bad. So I may have food poisoning tomorrow.
You'll know here in a few hours.
I'll know here in a few hours for sure. Yeah. I was like, no, it's perfectly fine. So I hope with my level 4 of exhaustion that I can survive the con save that I need to continue living.
Yeah, you know, some meat I'm willing to go a little, you know, a little iffy on. Chicken's not one of them, man. If I think chicken's bad, it's out. It's gone.
Well, the thing is that ever since my wife had our child, her dietary, what she could eat, has changed completely. Mm-hmm. So chicken is one thing now that kind of like sets her off. If it's not perfect, and we don't know what perfect is, it tastes bad to her.
Okay.
And while me, I'm just a food disposal of hate and crime. So I thought it was fine. So I made her some barbecue chicken, and I had my cream of mushroom soup chicken. And I thought it was fine. I tasted the barbecue one. That tasted horrible because it's barbecue. And barbecue is horrible. And
I love barbecue, but I can't really eat it. So
yeah, you and most Americans, and it's the worst sauce ever.
Yeah. To each their own. You know, I had a friend who didn't like red sauce on pizza. Like, he liked no sauce on pizza.
Well, there's always a sauce on pizza. It's usually a butter sauce then.
Yeah, you know, like
garlic bread.
Sure, yeah, I guess. Whatever.
I mean, garlic bread pizza is amazing. So.
Yeah, I guess you could go that route. But he would just order it with, I just want cheese and pepperonis on the bread. On the bread.
That's essentially just garlic bread covered in cheese and pepperoni. Which is amazing. When you think about it.
It is. They normally make that in calzone form. Not in pizza form. It's the same damn thing. It's just made differently.
One of my favorites is that like Alfredo pizza?
Oh yeah, that's
yeah, it's really good. But you get the really cheap Alfredo pizza where they use like the really cheap Alfredo sauce instead of making it
Prego.
Actual cheese sauce, and it tastes horrible because it's like this cheap sauce they made.
Yeah. That's what I make at home, because I'm not going through the effort of making real, you know, Alfredo sauce. I'm just going to buy a jar of whatever the hell they've got, Prego or Ragu, and I'm going to throw it on there, because I can't really eat a lot of red sauce in general. So.
Yep.
So my favorite, though, I like just chicken pesto with feta. That's all I need.
That was a food portion of the podcast. Now moving on to D&D.
Yeah, moving on to tabletop role-playing games.
So I was away for the weekend, so I didn't really have much to talk about D&D-wise. I played some Adventures League. My group spent 2 hours shopping in the town.
Oh,
we've all had those shopping sessions. We're like, oh, we got 100 gold to spend. What are we going to spend it on? 2 hours later. All right, and we'll get 400 days of rations and 3 climbing ropes. That'll bring us to 72 gold. And it's just like,
yep. and we're going to finagle this one guy who has a healing potion for cheap. Hopefully it's actually a healing potion, and we'll give that to the tank. There's 99 gold spent.
So
yeah, I fucking hate shopping trips in tabletop games.
The best part was, too, is I was like rolling randomly for stuff they had in the shop that was beyond the basic player handbook Thor.
Yeah.
And like, I rolled like a magic greatsword, like a plus one.
That's only 1,000 gold or something.
I said 850. You know, yeah, they could, there was enough people there, they could have thrown in enough to get one. The best part, though, is the guy sold his weapon, bought a greatsword, and he goes, "You got anything better than this?" After buying the greatsword. So then I rolled, and it became up to be a greatsword. I was like, "Yeah, there's got a plus one variant of that. You got the sale discount cheapo bullshit one."
Yeah, good job.
Yeah. So it was a shopping trip. So I really have nothing game wise to talk about. There's been no news. They republished an article about how to use a deck of many things in your
oh my god, really?
Game on D&D Beyond. They have a lot of conventions coming up. Gary Con's later this month, and then yeah, there's PAX East later on after that.
What's the other one? There's another one the week before Gary Con that Luke Gygax is going to be at.
Probably the PAX East one. The PAX East one.
No. It's like Legends and Founders, I think, is what it's called.
Okay.
I'm trying to find out. Yeah, Founders and Legends. I think it's in like Geneva as well. I'm pretty sure it's the week before Gary Con.
Yeah, that's cool. One thing to note that at the Dungeons and Dragons at PAX East, they have three things that they're highlighting. Descent into the Lost Caverns of Tsukjaneth, whatever that one of the third party publications.
Camp. Yeah, Soj Camp.
They're doing a tournament of that at PAX East, and they're also doing a non-tournament play of it as well, and then they're doing Adventure League all weekend.
They're doing Adventures League at PAX East.
Yeah.
Even though we don't know if Adventures League is really a thing anymore.
Or what they're running, or what they're doing, who knows. So then at Gary Con, they have the D&D 50th Anniversary preview happening. They're hosting a panel called Dungeon Masters Tips and Tricks, okay? That they're actually going to have Chris Perkins and a few other people from the Dungeon Master 2024 book writing team there to discuss it further. So that'd actually be neat to go to.
Yeah.
They're hosting that same tournament again and same non-tournament play again. And then they have something called D&D Adventure League Epic Proxy Hunt. No idea what that is.
Yeah,
but
okay.
At least it's something for levels 5 to 16. So at least it's tier 2, tier 3 material for Adventures League. And it's in Sigil in the City of Doors. So maybe they're actually going to be releasing something that weekend. It should be like 2 weeks from now. So that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. But
yeah, I mean,
it's
that time of year. There's not a whole lot of news.
No, I mean, right? March is the month they put out their. Normally, they have that giant bundle book with all the different stories and whatnot.
And that's probably coming, but it's not here yet.
No, it's not. It's not coming at all because the next book to be released is the Eve of Vecna in May.
Right.
Well, so
yeah, that's fair.
That's what we're waiting for, and.
Yeah, and then the only thing I'm waiting on as far as D&D is obviously the player's handbook. So my buddy Drew has run a whole bunch of one-shots over the years, but mm-hmm. he's finally got it together and decided he wants to run his own D&D 5e campaign. And, okay. You know, me and our play group were like, yeah, okay, we're in. So I'll probably be sort of taking kind of off weekends and running my own stuff. And he'll actually be running a campaign at some point here soon that mm-hmm. I get to play in. And he made the mistake that every new game master makes in that he said, play whatever is in the books, play whatever's written. So immediately I'm like, okay, you said it. I like messing with brand new DMs. I want to teach them very early on that they have to say no
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to just go out. I'm going to play a halfling. So I'm going to have a halfling luck. At fourth level, I plan on taking lucky. I'm playing a wizard. I'm going to use Wildemount, the Wildemount book.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to play probably a Chrono Wizard or Gravomancer, one of the two most broken wizard subclasses in all of 5e.
What level are you guys again?
We're going to start at first, but he said the campaign should run to like 15th to 20th level. Like this is a long term thing. But starting out at level one, okay, yeah, it's level one. Everybody kind of sucks at level one, but as you go up and you start getting some of the abilities of this class, it can effectively, at second level, I can effectively do a Silvery Barbs a couple times a day. They don't call it Silvery Barbs, but it operates almost the same way. And then at 14th level, I think, you can just force a roll to fail or succeed.
Yeah.
So, it's already got some really just busted abilities. Then I'm just going to take a shitload of Silvery Barbs. Because it's fucking Silvery Barbs. I just want to piss him off.
So you don't want him to have any fun at all?
No, I just want him to learn to say no. He should have said no immediately. And if he tells me I can't play it after three games, I'm like, cool. I'll play something else.
I mean, it's not like that's... It's not like having a lot of Silvery Barbs is that bad.
Oh, well, my friend Mike's going to do it, too. He's going to take Silvery Barbs also.
Oh, okay. So you guys are going to double up on Silvery Barbs and just basically take a DM who's blossoming into the world, and you're going to just step on his flower.
Yes.
So hard.
We are going to deflower the shit out of this DM.
I didn't say that.
Oh, I did.
Okay. Congrats.
No, it'll be fine. We won't push him too hard. He's been playing with me for 10 years at this point. He understands.
He knows.
Mm-hmm. He knows. He was my problem player. Like now I get an opportunity to be his problem player.
You're not supposed to take revenge on people.
Says who?
Says decency, man.
So the reason I even brought that up, you were talking about upcoming books and stuff. I'll have to ask him before we actually start playing if, when the new player's handbook actually comes out, can we use that? Or are we stuck with the old stuff? Because that thing's supposed to come out here in 6 months or so, give or take.
About eight, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. So,
you could always say, hey, I'm going to use Humblewood.
No.
Why not? Some of the races in there are really broken.
They're animal races, and you know me, I don't play animal races.
I know, but you could be like an invisible spider person.
I could probably already
Chronomancer. Do that.
Yeah, invisible spider, Chronomancer. And not the broke-ass Chronomancer that we found online that time. It's not that bad.
Well, I played the Gravity Wizard a long time ago, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I played that for a one-shot or two-shot. I don't remember what it was. And that's we were 18th level or something. At the highest end, it's just busted.
I mean, if you really want to just make something that's really just busted, you could go with some kind of, like, warlock or ranger build and just stack all the damage and crit fish,
Oh yeah, that's literally what Drew did before. He built that combination in a what's the one where if you're in darkness they can't see you, or if they have dark vision they can't see you?
The Gloomstalker, yeah.
Right, yeah. So he did a build based off of Gloomstalker, and we were in an undead area where everything was nighttime all the time. So, okay. Yeah. So he was just 100% invisible unless we had a torch out at all times, pretty much. Fucking annoying.
So what you really need to do, then, is you don't need to build the Chrono Wizard, okay? You need to build one of those paladins that all they do is just stand there and they can't be hit, and they don't let anyone else get hit. Okay? Yeah.
I could do that, but I want to play a spellcaster.
Right. But so you just take the first couple levels in Paladin, and then you off-class him into mage. You know, and then take all the mage feats as well, too. So you just have all the silvery barbs and shields and shit.
Yeah.
Or you could do it with Eldritch Knight, too. That'd be fine. And then just, like, you block everything, reduce all the damage, heal everybody up to full, silvery barbs all the crits, you know.
Yeah, just make it the worst. He's never going to hit anybody with anything.
Yeah. And then it'll just be a joke to see how many times you actually hit somebody with it. And then he'll learn about the spells that don't require saving throws and then really mess you up.
Yes, that's how you do it. Yep. You have to that.
That's what I have to do.
Yeah. Either that or you just or just throw enough shit at them. Like, you know, if two wizards have silvery or two casters have silvery barbs, I need to look. I think wizards can get silvery barbs. It might be a bard thing. I'm not sure.
No, they can.
Okay. But if a couple of wizards have it, it can be a pain in the ass to, like, a single target, you know, the big boss. But if the big boss also has 12 henchmen, silvery barbs is not nearly as good.
Well, you take it. Listen, as someone who gets silvery barbs on a nightly basis, it's. You use it against all the crits, that's good enough. Because the DM also has fun and enjoyment from getting crits. Yep. And having it taken away sucks.
Yeah, and we'll definitely be doing that.
Yeah.
Yep. So I got to thinking about the whole Explorer's Guide to Wildemount recently because Bruce last week called me up out of nowhere and wanted to tell me he had seen a TikTok about one of the most busted spells in 5e, of which I'm going to take, by the way, since it's in Explorer's Guide. It is Immovable Object. And
okay. When
he called me up, I'm like, I don't think that's a spell. I've never seen it. And then I found out where it was at. I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense why it's busted, because nearly everything in that book is busted.
Right.
But let's go over Immovable Object. So, second level transmutation spell. It is a gravity spell. Casting time, one action. Duration is 1 hour. Now, it does require 25 gold pieces worth of gold dust to cast. So, at least it's got that as a sort of detriment.
Okay.
You touch an object that weighs no more than 10 pounds and cause it to become magically fixed in place.
Mm-hmm.
You and the creatures you designate when you cast the spell can move the object normally. You can also set a password that, when spoken within 5 feet of the object, suppresses the spell for 1 minute. If the object is fixed in the air, it can hold up to 4,000 pounds of weight. More weight causes the object to fall. Otherwise, a creature can use an action to make a strength check against your spell save DC. On a success, the creature can move the object up to 10 feet.
Yeah, similar to the immovable rod conversation we had.
Very similar. But, except this, you can cast it on anything that weighs no more than 10 pounds.
Right.
So I'm fighting a dude, and then I cast it on his shirt.
Right.
And his shirt can't move.
You have to touch it, though.
Yeah, I would have to make an attack roll.
Nah, I mean... See, this kind of goes into the whole idea is like you touch an object, so kind of like heat metal, you just have to see the metal and you can heat it up. So when this spell says you touch an object, and I want to touch someone's breastplate, okay?
Yep. We'll say a breast just for
for
the argument's sake. We'll say it weighs 10 pounds.
Well, breastplates weigh less than 10 pounds.
Yeah, breastplates aren't very heavy for anybody who's never worn one. So
you smack a breastplate. Hell, you could probably smack a sword. You could smack a shield. They're all
anything on the person.
Right. Yeah. And that thing is held in place. Now, I would say you could smack a shield, you know, without having to make an attack roll. All right? Because more than likely, they're just going to try to block you touching anyways, you know?
Right, yeah.
But yeah, that's an auto success. I can tell you this weekend that there were multiple times where I just went after people's shields at the LARP just to kind of play with them when I was a little baby raptor, and they just blocked the shit out of me for like 5 minutes. So, like, people will put shields in the way. So, yeah, I can definitely see touching a shield. Touching a breastplate, though, that's going to be pretty hard.
Yeah, but it's more of just the touch something that they're either holding or wearing or touching them at all. If you touch them at all and it's they've got an object that you're capable of touching, then the spell, there's nothing in the rules on the spell that says it wouldn't work.
Right.
I've gone through it thoroughly. So rules is written. At that point, for them to move, they have to use their action to make a strength check against your DC, and then they can only move up to 10 feet.
Yeah.
So, like, they're pretty well just fuckered at that point.
Yeah, they're definitely basically just trapped in place, unless they, like, you know, drop the shield, drop the sword, and keep moving.
Yeah, less of an issue if you hit a shield or a weapon, but if it's something they're wearing, then they're just kind of hosed.
Yeah. I always found it funny, like, thinking a little bit more meta. I was like, when you have something that's locked into space, you know, locked into the air, that it's not locked into the air, it's locked into that point of space-time.
Yeah.
So, like, you activate the movable rod and just shoots out of your hand, busts through the building, and it's just gone, because you're on a planet that's moving through space at, you know, thousands upon thousands of miles an hour, you know? I always found that much more entertaining. It's even more entertaining, too, if you touch someone's breastplate like that, and they just get ripped out into space immediately as the planet just keeps careening through
the
universe.
Planet Earth is spinning at, like, 26,000 miles an hour or some shit, so...
Just slap gone.
just turn
shape wildly coyote thing on the wall.
Yeah, it just turns them into fucking pink mist as they're ripped through their armor. Now, mind you, this specifically does say it is a Dunamancy, aka Graviturgy spell. So you're thinking of the other version of a movable object, which is a Chronomancy spell.
So yeah, this is. I mean, it's definitely, there's definitely more fuckery to do with this. I mean, just say with the immovable rod, there's a lot of fuckery for that, you know?
Oh, yeah. Immovable rod has been a busted item since first edition D&D.
Even if he's like, no, you can't touch the door's made of wood and it's 100 pounds. Okay, I touched the lock.
Yep.
Now the lock can't move, you know? So.
Yeah. I mean, so there was a guy in Solar or LARP the other chapter of it that actually had a throwing dagger that he could say a password and it became an immovable rod. Effectively, it became an immovable dagger. So he could place it in front of doors. He could stick it anywhere he wanted, and it just couldn't be moved. And in that game, that was a real nightmare because there's a lot of rules for safety and everything else. But
yeah,
in D&D in general, just immovable objects are always a problem and always have been.
Yeah, because players are gonna find some way to shove it down a dragon's throat, and they're like, "Well, what happens when he moves now? Ha ha! What's the damage? F off! That's the damage. F off! I don't want to do math. You're making me do math. The dragon wins."
Yeah. He horks it up. I don't know.
Surprise, there's a beholder just telling me the entire time. The musical rod is destroyed.
Yep.
Yeah, now there's a beholder on the field. That's what happens.
He ate the beholder like 2 minutes before you guys got here.
You make a DM mad, the dragon's beholders in the bellies are going to start showing up.
Yeah, but and just the fact that... You know, just imagine a dragon with this immovable object thing, and it has to beat your DC to move this damn thing 10 feet. We're talking about a dragon here. Come on.
Yeah, it is nice that it reduces it to 10 feet, because it does at least still do something, you know?
Yeah, it makes it usable even if they make that strength check. But I'm pretty sure a dragon should be able to move it farther than that. The higher levels, if you cast the spell using a spell slot of 4th or 5th level, the DC to move it increases by 5, which is a lot. It can carry up to 8,000 pounds away, and the duration increases to 24 hours. And if you cast it using a 6th level or higher, the DC increases by 10. It can hold up to, or it can carry up to 20,000 pounds away, and the effect is permanent until dispelled.
Well, I mean, you could say, too, that... A dragon is more than 4,000 pounds, and thus doesn't have to make the save, and just it can move it no matter what.
That's a fair argument at least.
Because I was looking here at the Marut, and like that Marut is gotta be, you know.
So what is a Marut?
Oh, it's a large construct.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay, go ahead.
It's a large construct from the Hall of Cordons in the City of Sigil.
Yeah.
It's basically sent to go basically kill liches. To take all their backstory and shove it down to a single sentence.
Yeah, they're one of the inevitables.
Yeah. So, like, it doesn't make weapon attacks. It just automatically hits and does 60 force damage. So,
yeah, aren't these the fuckers you just turn off magic? If it's not them,
they're immune to all magic forms. They can plane shift. Do AoE radiant damage.
I know there's some of the inevitables that hang out, like, in the city council chamber or whatever that just sort of turn off magic.
Yeah.
There's a couple of those. Yeah. Because we ran into those in one of my 5e games I was playing in years ago. I was playing a sorcerer, and we ended up in Sigil in that room, and we were bartering a contract with somebody else, and I was like, oh, well, this is fun. I'm useless. Can't do anything at all anyway. So.
No magic! Aha! Sucker!
Yep. Yep, so we couldn't have attacked him even if we wanted to.
Yeah, I just love the fact that they can auto-hit. Just bam.
I don't even mind that. Like, I honestly don't mind some things that can just auto-hit. Like, that was a thing for, at least in 3rd edition, like, deities could just hit whenever they wanted. Right? You know, it makes sense. You're a god. You should be able to do something like that.
Speaking of deities and dragons and all that, did you see the new gargantuan Bahamut figure they're putting out?
I have not. Yeah. I'm guessing it's ridiculous.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's freaking insane. It's part of that 50th anniversary thing. I'll put the link in our podcast chat, like I do everything. But it is it's pretty cool. And one thing that it has above the gargantuan,
is it the Wizkids one?
Yeah. Okay. Is it has this basically detachable, unattachable fire. Like the ancient red dragon that they had in 3.5 that had the fire flame that came out of it.
Yeah.
So now you basically have this giant platinum dragon with his platinum breath and everything. It's got a really cool.
Oh, it even comes with his human form and the pillar of.
That's not his human form, though.
Eh.
That's Fizban.
Yeah. Whatever, but I notice it's got the little, what are they? The pillar of pigeons or whatever the fuck that thing is.
I thought Fizban was different than Bahamut.
Because
this says that he can often be found as Fizban. The fact.
Yeah. So okay, you got to remember that they have fucked up things in 5e.
Why wouldn't they fucking take the paladin? The cool looking art that they have and make a mini out of that from the D&D game.
I don't know. Okay, so part of the problem comes down to how they have written Dragonlance with 5e.
Right.
Because Bahamut is not in Dragonlance. Bahamut does not exist in Dragonlance. Never has. But they decided to rewrite lore since they didn't talk to the actual creators of the fucking setting. Apparently Fizban was the avatar of the god Paladine, basically the lawful good god.
Okay.
And now apparently they're saying that he is also Bahamut, which was not ever the fucking case. It's funny too, because I noticed this week Margaret Weiss was taking some fucking shots at WotC about it too. Not about that specifically, but just in general about the way Dragonlance is gone.
Well, yeah. It's the worst selling book.
Yeah. Yeah, because the people who love the setting, I mean, if the fact they didn't decide to consult them on it, anybody who's been a fan of that setting is immediately going to be taken aback by that. You know, right. That means you didn't care about the actual setting or the lore. You just want to have the IP and do whatever the hell you want with it. And that's not a good way to go forward.
Huh. So,
But yeah, that seems to be the case. But yeah, somebody had asked online, you know, what should they do as far as running Dragonlance for 5e, and she actually replied saying, "Don't."
Yeah.
With a smiley face after it, but yeah, definitely taking some shots at WotC for it.
So I linked the image to the card game that was that had the, when Forgotten Realms was the Wizard of Magic the Gathering set. And I linked the really cool artwork for Bahamut, where he has his 12 canaries all around him. And what they actually had the 12 canaries mini, but that should be the model for fucking Bahamut. Like, that's the one that's been established the most recently to be Bahamut, you know?
Yeah.
Like, okay, fine. If you want to retcon and make fucking Fizban from Bahamut, okay, that's fine. I'm looking through the book right now. I don't see any reference that Fizban was Bahamut in this book. He was just a separate person the entire time.
Yeah, well, Fizban was, he was the, like I said, he was the avatar of Paladine.
So,
okay, well,
that's dumb. I don't like that.
Yeah.
Because I was really looking forward to seeing that mini. You know, that mini would have been cool. Especially if it had the birds built in. But, you know, I like the fact that the birds are a separate mini. So you can kind of put it behind whatever figure you really want to use for Bahamut. And they got this massive gargantuan figure. And they got the breath weapon to it. I'm definitely getting this.
It's $400.
I spent $400 on Tiamat. I spent $400 on Karras.
Okay, that is a fair point. You actually have Tiamat.
Yeah.
So if you're going to buy the Tiamat, you gotta get the Bahamut to go with it. Even if you never use them, if all they do is look cool on a shelf, at least you've got the set.
So what happens when Bahamut and Tiamat make a baby?
That's how universes begin.
Yeah, that's a good answer. And at least they have like the cool. I mean, like even though it's Fizban, it's really cool that they have a human avatar for Bahamut, and it's really cool that they have the canaries to go with.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
That's really cool.
Look at it this way: you're not paying $400 for just a Bahamut miniature. You're also paying, you know, you're getting a free Fizban and canaries miniature with it.
I already have a Fizban mini. I don't even want one.
Well, you're going to have two of them now.
Yeah.
I'm guessing they don't look the same, though.
No, the other one's just standing there. That one has, like, a spell effect on him.
Yeah, this one's got doing lightning or some shit above his head.
Summon canary!
That's bird. Probably what it is. Yeah, summon birds.
So, yeah, it's... I'm looking forward to that. I don't like... I mean, I know he's a platinum dragon, and he's going to be a huge fucking dragon. But it just looks weird being one color to me.
Yeah, that was the one thing. I mean, at least I think the interior of his mouth and probably his eyes are kind of different. But this, he's just all silver everywhere.
Yeah. How do you defeat? I mean, other than size, how is this different than the adult silver dragon that's out there?
They really should have made his breath weapon not. Like, it looks clear almost. Like,
no, breath weapon. Actually, I don't have no complaints with because it. I don't think it is clear. I think it's like silvery reflective things.
It could be, but if you really want to make something stand out, he should have had. Well, I don't know. I'm guessing he has a fire breath, but
yeah, he has a platinum breath.
A platinum breath. What does he spit? Platinum coins at people.
Hold on.
I got to look it up myself. I'm like, what? I don't know. I've never used him. A powerful. So he has two breath weapons. One is vapor, and the other is a powerful cone of cold. They should have gone with the vapor.
Okay.
Yeah, they could have had like a green gaseous something coming out of there. That would have looked better.
He has platinum breath. I'm looking at the actual stats right now.
I'm looking at the Forgotten Realms wiki. So.
Yeah, you don't look at that. That's always wrong. So he has a plat. He has breath weapon recharged on a 5 or 6, and he has two breath weapons. He has exalting breath. The aspect, because you only fight the aspect of Bahamut, and you have to fight it twice. So you don't actually fight the real Bahamut. You just fight his aspect. Kind of like you have to always fight the aspect of Tiamat, not the real Tiamat. So the Exulting Breath is the aspect that kills restoring winds of Mount Celestia in a 300-foot cone. Each creature in that area of the aspect's choice regains 13d10 hit points, and each creature in that area of the aspect's choice that has been dead for no longer than 1 hour is restored to life with all of its hit points. And then its offensive Platinum Breath, the aspect exhales radiant platinum flames in a 300-foot cone. Each creature in that area must make a DC 26 dexterity saving throw, taking 12d10 radiant damage on a failed save or half as much as on a successful one.
I'm just going to go with the idea of him spitting platinum coins, because that's way funnier.
like the hive mind or the brain dragon.
Yeah, what is it? Spit brains at you?
No, the elder brain dragon is pretty much an elder brain that attached itself to a dragon, okay?
Yeah.
So it controls and makes mind flayers, okay? So it has tadpole brine breath. Okay.
It spits tadpoles at you.
The dragon exhales brine in a 120-foot line that is 15 feet wide. Each creature in that area must make a DC 22 con save or take 10d10 psychic damage. On a success or failure, if the creature isn't a construct or undead, it becomes infested with Ithlid tadpoles. While infested, the creature takes 3d10 psychic damage at the start of each of their turns. The creature can repeat the saving throw at the end of their turns, ending the effect on itself if it succeeds 3 of these saves. If the creature is targeted by magic that ends the curse or restores 40 hit points or more, the tadpoles infesting the creatures are killed instantly, ending the effect. If the humanoid is reduced to 0 hit points while infested, the creature is stable and remains unconscious for 6d12 hours. When that unconsciousness ends, the creature transforms into a mind flayer.
Yep, so it spits on you and makes mind flayers.
Yeah, and
I mean, honestly,
with
something like that, you only need one of them. And then it's just going to fly over a town and make a fucking mind flayer army.
Well, I mean, it's the equivalent of an elder brain, you know?
Yeah.
So it's...
Except elder brains don't fly at a speed of 60 or 90 or whatever the hell they're at.
100,000! And this mini's only $82? I might have to pick that up.
You're just spending all this money on D&D stuff. It's all
well,
about
I built,
the minis.
I built my magic deck, so I got money to spare.
Oh, okay. You're done. It's tax return time. I get it.
But yeah, the Elder Brain Dragon is pretty fucking cool, and it's a CR22, which I think is way too low just on the breath weapon alone.
Because probably.
Back at our conversation from last week, recharging a 5 or 6, either it's going to get it and get it and get it and get it, and you're just dead.
Yeah.
Or it's never going to get it back once it uses it once. But
yep.
Still, if you even save, you're still infested, which is freaking insane.
Yeah, but the infestation was 3d10 psychic damage at the start of the round. What else was there to it?
You have to, you have to save 3 times.
Oh, okay. I thought you just stop, drop, and roll.
No.
That's how you get rid of the infestation. Yeah, throw some talcum powder on there.
I mean, an elder brain's a CR14. That means I guess that was an elder brain infused with a Netherese crown. So.
Oh yeah, Baldur's Gate is a whole it's whatever. It's a whole other thing.
Yeah, so that would up its CR rating a little bit, but an elder brain is pretty hard to fucking kill. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that's usually because they have a whole bunch of mind flayers with them, too, and that makes them very difficult to handle. I mean, mind flayers, in general, kind of suck for players.
Only 210 hit points, man.
That's not too many.
Armor class of 10. No damage reduction at all on it.
On the Elder Brain?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're never fighting just an Elder Brain.
Doesn't matter, man. A level 14, you're putting out 200 damage a round.
Yeah, but if you've got, you know, 8 mind flayers in that room with you, that's a whole other ordeal. because then you start taking 200 damage a round.
Yeah. I got one item that can fix that encounter.
What's that?
Necklace of Fireballs.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that that was introduced in Dragon Heist. Okay.
What, and Necklace of Fireballs? No, it's way no, fucking
old. No, in 5e. Oh, okay. It was introduced and it was provided to the players at the beginning of Dragon Heist. Okay. And it has a lot of beads on it. Okay.
Yeah.
But the fact that you can detonate all the beads at once.
Yeah.
That's getting what you potential do. 9 fireballs going off in one location.
Yep.
I mean,
I'm pretty certain that I have never used a necklace of fireball that I didn't activate every single bead at the same time. It's
yeah,
like when
party
I
didn't when they got it, but
when I fire a wand of magic missiles, I use every single charge in that wand at the same time.
I use all the magic missiles.
I do. I mean,
level 9.
Yeah. Like when my sorcerer, when I was playing him, or I think it was a sorcerer, might've been another character, but I had one that had, I just walked around with 2 wands of magic missiles and my opening barrage, the first round and second round of combat was just me unloading with both of them.
How did you do both of them?
I had 2 different wands.
Yeah, but you only get 1 action.
Yeah, that's why I said first and second round.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, that's only 7 first level magic missiles.
Yeah. But we weren't.
And it could explode.
Yeah, I was willing to take that risk to get that much automatic guaranteed damage on things.
What's the average damage of that? What, 3?
Yeah, 3 damage per missile. 7 missiles. So 21 damage out of the gate.
It's not 7 missiles, it's
Or I don't know, I don't have it pulled up in front of me.
Let me get a calculator. It's 3 damage average. Well actually it's 3.5 damage average, because it's 2.5 for the thing, so it's 3.5 damage average times
this is the math 4 podcast where we do
times
math.
Times 7. Enter. So you 98 damage average.
How many magic missiles is that?
It has 7 charges.
Yeah.
And you can expend 1 or more charge.
Right, and each charge is 1 magic missile.
Yeah, is 1 first level magic missile.
Right. It's no. It is a single missile. It's not a barrage of missiles.
So it increases the level if you expend more charges. So the most you can get is a level 7 magic missile.
Right.
Which would be 4, and then an additional 6, so it would be 10. Okay. So 3.5 times 10. So 35 damage.
Yeah. 35 on average, yes.
On average. So that's not bad.
No, but when you're 10th level and under, that's not bad.
But you could do 9 fireballs in one area.
Well, yeah, but you get 1 use of that thing ever, and it's more expensive than a wand of magic missiles. Oh, don't get me wrong. The Necklace of Fireball is definitely way more powerful. But
let's assume you're a level 10 paladin.
Okay.
Okay. And you're being tortured. And in this game, people don't understand how horrific medieval torture really was.
Yeah. Okay? They need to go watch Braveheart or...
No, because they cut all the stuff out of Braveheart.
That's right. What was the other torture Mel Gibson movie that he did? He did a couple of them.
The Patriot. Watching that was torture.
That's fair. Mad Max 1. That was kind of torture.
So let's just say that somebody takes the wand of magic missiles and places in a very uncomfortable place on the paladin.
Like
and
in
just
the backs of a Volkswagen.
Like in the backs of a Volkswagen. And then they just launch it. And that's 38 damage to that back of the Volkswagen. Now, the paladin has enough hit points to survive that even at max damage. Okay?
Oh, easily at 10th level, yeah.
Right, easily at 10th level. Does he retire as an adventurer? Out of shame.
After you've been humiliated in that manner, probably, yes.
Yeah, okay. Because we know he survives. But you let that paladin survive.
Yeah, mind you, he does not ever speak of it. When he talks about retiring, he used to be an adventurer, but then he took a magic missile to the knee.
Yeah.
And that's how he retired.
And then everyone in the bar is like, I heard it was the back of a Volkswagen. And that's why you can't do cold shots with magic missiles in 5th edition.
Yes.
Or 4th edition.
Yeah.
Even though people still try, and I still let them for some dumb reason.
I don't do called shots unless the spell or attack somehow magically says you can do a called shot.
I make them succeed a very hard arcana check. So 15 at least.
Okay.
If they miss the arcana, then they miss the magic missiles.
Yeah. People used to do that a lot in 2nd edition, and there might have been rules in one of the many, many hundreds of books, but I never came across rules for called shots that I remember.
Yeah. There are never any good ones.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I understand wanting to do called shots, but if you've ever... Yeah, it might be a little easier if you're an archer or something, but I know doing a called shot, if you're actually meleeing with somebody, good fucking luck.
Yeah,
just through the LARP experience and martial arts experience and everything, that's not that easy.
So I linked up the silver dragon back on the Bahamut conversation for a little bit on our Discord. It has a better paint job than the Bahamut does.
Which one is this? The Icon of the Realms.
So
adult silver.
For those of you that don't go to our Discord, and you should.
Actually,
the
Bahamut like
figure is just 100% toes, fingers, maybe a little in the mouth. Is like everything is silver.
The mouth
or platinum,
it looked,
quote unquote.
Yeah, the mouth it looked like was pink. I think the eyes are probably different colored, and the claws were black.
Yeah,
that was the, otherwise it's silver.
Yeah, so the silver dragon actually has like a tarnished silver underbelly, and then like he's got an actual mouth with a red tongue and the blue eyes. His talons are black and stuff like that, instead of being completely silver.
Yeah.
So maybe it's something you have to see in the store to see the figure and it'll look better.
It really just looked like somebody took a can of spray paint and spray painted the whole thing silver. Whereas at least with this one, it has sort of it's almost like gold undertones on the belly or something.
Yeah. Makes me wonder if there's an unpainted variant of him.
Could be.
Because there is of the Tiamat and the Tarrasque.
Yeah, I'd paint him polka dot. But that's why I don't paint things. I have terrible ideas.
Oh, your ideas are terrible. It doesn't look like they have a non-painted version of them.
Yeah.
But the Gargantuan figures are really cool. I love my Tarrasque. There is an unpainted variant of the Tarrasque. I want to get painted as a birthday cake. I think that'd be cool.
Birthday cake Tarrasque? That's awesome.
Yeah.
When's your birthday?
Coming soon.
Ooh. Coming soon to a theater near you. Probably shouldn't say on the air. Yeah.
April.
Yeah, April. Okay. Sometime next month.
I want a birthday cake Tarrasque. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah. So I got my book for Brindlewood Bay. The game of Grandmother's Battles Cthulhu. I've been reading through it, still trying to wrap my head around how to properly run a game, because it is wholly a player. It's like a player narrative driven game where the players get a lot of input on how things operate. Like I can. As the DM, I could sort of say, you know, give a little descriptions of what an area is, but then the players have a shitload of input of, you know, how they operate and what might actually be in that area, mm-hmm. which is complete and utter change for me as a DM. You know, like people who play D&D, the DM has the whole description of what's in the room, and that's it.
Right.
Whereas in this case, it's not that way. So I'm going to have to wrap my head around that when I actually go to run this thing. I'm planning to run it this weekend. We'll see if I'm ready or not.
Yeah.
But it's pretty awesome. It is a lethal game mm-hmm. to an extent. Like, it tells you multiple times in the book to kill the characters. Like, it wants you to kill the characters. At the same time, the players have an ability called Taking a Crown, where they could effectively push themselves closer to retirement for the character, but then you just have to backtrack on what happened. So it might be a thing of they fail a roll, and then I say somebody walks up behind you and shoots you with a gun, your character dies, obviously with a lot more description than that.
Yeah.
And then they could say, I'm going to take a crown. And then I'm like, okay, well, that's one thing that could have happened, but instead this is what actually happened. So their character will survive it, but after like three or four uses of the crown, I think you have to retire the character.
So I would assume as a party of grandmas, you retire a character pretty much every day when tea time occurs.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, tea time is interesting as well. That's actually almost a thing. You have an area called a cozy place. And the whole thing is sort of designed like it's a television show. Like they really took Murder, She Wrote to heart when designing this game, because you are almost telling it like a television show.
Okay.
So you'll have a scene and one of the characters might, we'll just say they trip and, hurt their ankle or whatever. So then they could say at some point they were wanting to go to their cozy place, and you'll have to do a scene where they're there resting up.
Mm-hmm.
And, the player gets to sort of narrate what's going on in the scene. There's even a game master, maneuver is what they kind of call them, I think, where you can go to commercials. And okay. if something terrible actually would happen to one of the characters, like I was talking about somebody pulling a gun on them, at that point, and they failed their role, I know the character's going to die. I have the option to say, and now we go to commercial. And the player has to narrate a commercial, like a TV commercial.
Okay.
But it increases their role from a failure to a low success.
Mm-hmm. I like that. That's cute.
Yeah, it is. It's really kind of a neat game. I'm definitely looking forward to trying to run this thing. A lot of that I'm running is in preparation to run Dune, which is also a bit more of a narrative-based game.
Mm-hmm.
We actually made a character for Dune, the Imperium, this weekend, just to sort of see how it works and everything. And there's a lot of there's what's referred to as drives in the game, and these are phrases that sort of boil your character down into what does he believe. And I immediately equated it when going through this to that shit in 5e that nobody actually uses. What are the ideals and all that stuff?
Yeah.
I don't remember what they call it. I know ideals was one of them. I think flaw might be one of them.
Yep.
But in Dune, you have three of them as well that you have to pick. And one of them must be a negative. One of them, and the others can be positives, but one of them has to be a flaw. Mm-hmm. And these actually have in-game consequences where you can't perform actions if it's sort of counter to what your drives are.
Interesting.
Yeah. So like in D&D, okay, your drive might be to become super wealthy. So you might get into a scenario where you have to kind of fuck over your friends to make 10,000 gold, and you probably wouldn't do that. But in Dune, if that was your drive, you're going to go through with it.
You're going to do it, Mohadeeb. You're going to do it.
Yeah. Yep. So lots of interesting things I'm picking up from looking through all these narrative-based games, which I've barely ever played any of and never run anything like it. So,
did I talk to you about the Power Rangers role-playing game?
You may have mentioned that there was one, but we definitely haven't talked about it on here that I remember.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, I think I talked to, maybe it was on our stream a little bit, but I was at one of the local LGSs that wasn't my normal one, and they had the Power Rangers book there. I didn't look through the player manual at all. I looked straight at the monster manual, because the monster manual is what interests me. So I have no idea about the fight system or anything like that. I mean, they got strength, smart, speed, social, toughness. They got your standard. They have numbers, okay? But that wasn't what I focused on.
Renegade Game Studios. Is that who makes it? Yeah.
Yeah. So what interested me was I picked up the Monster Manual, which is called Power Rangers Role Playing Game Finster's Monstermatic Cookbook. Okay, and you can go to the Renegade Studio page and oh my god,
they have you can get the role playing books, the core rule books, in different Power Rangers colors.
Yeah, you can. Yeah,
that's cool.
It looks pretty cool. I'm not gonna lie, it looks pretty cool. But I was looking at the monsters, and the monsters, of course, have like a base form, and then they have a grown form. So when you actually hop in the Zords and fight everybody, okay. So sure. All monsters have two phases. It seems that the powers of the monsters are based off of like, you know, attacks per round, but then they have like scene powers where like you're fighting in the cafeteria, so you can use these scene powers once each scene. And then when you move to a different scene in the same fight, okay, because that always happens. Oh, now we're in the parking lot.
Yep.
Scene powers recharge. But that wasn't even what was the coolest part about it. The coolest part about it, though, was the hang-ups, okay? And if you go to the link I have on the Discord, or you look up the thing, they have an example of a monster called Toadie. So Toadie, his hang-ups are... For the love of Stingerella. Toadie is deeply in love with Stingerella and does everything in his power to keep her from harm. This often means getting in the way of opponents who get too close, possibly taking hits for her, and other signs of his devotion. Should Stingerella be defeated while Toadie can see her, he immediately surrenders and runs to her side. he has another hang-up called the Poison Toad Emblem. The hub of Toadie's power is collected and focused upon a small toad-shaped emblem worn on his forehead. Attacks can be made at a -2 penalty in order to the target to focus, inflicting one additional psychic damage if successful. So that really doesn't mean much, but I looked up Goldar. Remember Goldar?
Yes.
The dog in the gold armor with the wings and the sword?
Yeah, he was the sort of crony of the lady. What was her name?
So, Goldar, his thing was something along the lines of, like, Goldar the undefeatable, okay? And it was, whenever he critically hit somebody, he spent the next round taunting them and saying how great he was. And I'm like... All monsters need to have these. They need to have these hang-ups.
I am in for this. That's fantastic.
So, like if he crits, or, like, he, like, in his large form, if he disables a Zord, he taunts them as well. And does, like, this massive attack as his hang-up. And so I love the fact that the monsters have built... Like, you watch the show, at least from our age... You know, we didn't watch it probably that often, but we watched the first season or two.
The first season I've seen maybe a dozen episodes or so of it. I have a relatively good understanding of what the show is.
No, monsters always did stupid shit, and you're like, why are they doing that? Well, it's because their stat block told them to.
Yeah, it's because they're pro wrestlers.
So I saw that, I'm just like, the people who made this game, really thought about the monsters, you know? Adding in that little bit of extra flair to make it worthwhile, you know? Having the Toad emblem and the hit, and having him always protect Stingerella, you know?
Yep. I'm very curious what Rita Repulsa's stats would be. I'll have to find them at some point. I've never been a massive Power Rangers fan or anything, but that's really freaking cool. And I love the fact that I assume everybody gets to play Power Rangers. So, you know, if you have a 6-player group, you got 6 colors. That's how many there were, right?
It depended. There's always start off with 5.
Right, and then they added the Green Ranger later on.
And then at the mid-season, they always added in a 6th Ranger who was either silver or green or something like that.
Okay. Apparently you can buy for $300 the Power Rangers Role-Playing Game Limited 6-player core rulebook set that comes in all of the 6 colors. In a nice, you know, box.
So my understanding too is that because Renegade Studio has a license for Power Rangers and G.I. Joe and Transformers, that they all share a very similar system and they can work with each other.
Probably so, yeah.
So if you wanted to have Power Rangers versus Transformers
versus G.I. Joes,
versus G.I. Joe's and accompanied by My Little Pony, I think it would work. Because there is the My Little Pony tabletop game by Renegade Studios.
Oh, jeez.
And I don't think they would make a rule book that's a new system for each one of these. They would probably have their own unique flair, of course.
Yeah.
But it's probably going to follow the same rule set. Probably.
Wow, okay. I did not know. Mind you, I have not seen Renegade Studios, so I didn't know anything about them. I'd seen some of the tabletop role-playing games, but I didn't know who made it. But I'm scrolling around on their website. They actually have Vampire the Masquerade Rival. They call it Rivals card game.
One, yeah.
Me as an old Vampire the Masquerade fan, I used to love the old tabletop game, and I still have all of my Jihad cards from way the hell back when, which they changed it to Vampire something or other. They changed the title later on.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, it's a new Vampire the Masquerade card game. So might have to look into that. You know me, I'm always looking for new card games.
So looking at the G.I. Joe one, just in passing, they share the similar stat blocks. So they have strength, smarts, toughness, willpower, speed, social, and all that.
Good.
So yeah, you can easily combine all those three of those games together.
Apparently they have that. They have Axis and Allies also. I did not know that. Axis and Allies is a board game, a fairly old one that I've played a lot of over the years.
Yep. And a lot of people still play it for some reason.
It's a really good game.
Yeah.
I would imagine they have a lot of expansions and stuff that make it different.
I think people like the minis.
Yeah, that could be.
Because they got that World War II vibe.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh my god, yeah, Transformers have the Decepticons have hang-ups too.
That's awesome.
Whimsical. You don't take anything seriously. You like to focus on lighthearted fun and playing tricks on your friends. Whenever you make an infiltration skill test that is not just for fun, you take a -1.
I would imagine Starscream probably has something like cowled or bullied. He always got bullied, if I remember right. From
subordinate, you're most comfortable knowing that your specific place is in the chain of command, even if it's at the bottom. You often struggle to make your own decisions without receiving orders from superior. Take a -1 on any skill test that is not directly related to your mission as stated. Oh, here's Starscream's. Treacherous. You are untrustworthy, unreliable, and everyone knows it. You can never use lend assistance action, not because you don't want to, because no one accepts your help.
That's accurate, yeah.
That's Starscream there. Yeah. Yep. Jackass.
Yep. I don't remember a hell of a lot from the Transformer cartoon, but I remember him being an underhanded shit, always trying to take command.
I remember there was a one-off comic book series of the Transformers where they were kind of like resurrected in the Old West. Okay.
All right.
They fell back through time or something like that. And Megatron had the ability or the choice to choose one Decepticon to bring with him. And he chose Starscream.
Oh, God.
And it ended up that Starscream eventually betrayed Megatron to try to take over the world, blah, blah, blah. And it caused Megatron to fail and the good guys to win. And then when, like, the human people asked Megatron, why did you choose Starscream? He's like, I don't know, but it was the worst decision I've ever made in my tenure as a leader of the Decepticons. Like, yeah, Shockwave, Soundwave, any of the waves, any Transformer with the last name Wave, take them.
Literally any Decepticon, except for that one that you chose.
Take Laserbeak, because that cassette led to Decepticons for a little while. Sorry, Zubat, whatever his name was.
Yeah, take Ravage, that, you know, the cat cassette tape.
Yeah, he kicked ass during Beast Wars.
God.
You didn't see that, did you?
No, I haven't.
All right, so get this. All right. Beast Wars is a prequel to the G1 Transformers, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Just tell me, just to say, how are you following along?
I am. I understand. I know what G1 Transformers are. That's the first wave of
So the Maximals, who are the far, far future of the Autobots, okay? We're trying to escape the Predacons, who are the far, far future of the Decepticons, when they get caught in a wormhole and sent back through time where they landed on prehistoric Earth. All right? The Megatron that was there, who they were chasing, stole a golden disc, which the original Megatron made that had all of his knowledge and strategy in there for the intent purpose to help the next Megatron that came along to beat the whatever the new Autobots were. So now they're in the past. So they find the original arc with all the original Transformers. Megatron blows up the original Optimus, okay, and becomes superpowered because of it. So all then, right. A time-traveling Ravage, who is sent to help the Maximals defeat the Predacons and restore the timeline, decides to basically flip the script and join the Predacons in service to his old master. So the original Ravage from the cartoon show actually could talk and shit. And he, like, turned into this cassette tape and flew this jet around and blew up all the Maximals. And then eventually Rat Trap killed him and blew him up. And I actually kind of cried a little bit when I was a kid.
Huh.
Yeah.
That was the kids' TV show, or that was another? No, that was another one. That was later on.
Well, that was a kids' TV show.
Well, it wasn't from the original, is what I'm talking about. The very first.
It was later. Yeah, it was 90s. It made me sad. I liked Ravage a lot.
Me too. Because he's a cat. As I sit here and pet my own cat.
And that's a Transform podcast. My name is Christopher.
Yep. Next time I'm gonna do exactly what you just did to me with Dune. I'm gonna go into all of the minute details about this amazing setting. And by the way, if you haven't seen the fucking movie, go watch it. It's very good.
I don't know if I have 17 hours to watch a movie.
It's less than 3 hours.
No, because it's now the second one. So it means I got to watch a 4-hour movie I can watch a 4-hour movie.
So the first movie is about 2.5 hours, and the second movie is about 2.5 hours.
No, the first movie is like 17 hours, and then the next movie, which is the remake, which I have to then
watch. No, the original movie is about 5 hours. You could watch. There's no TV series. Well, there was a mini series. That's not a TV series.
Whatever. I got to watch that too.
Well, there's two of those. There's Dune. They did effectively the Sci-Fi Channel remake, and then there was Children of Dune. But yeah, you don't have to watch any.
My 17-hour estimate seems pretty accurate, huh?
Except you don't have to watch literally any of those except the two new ones. So you're looking at about 5 hours worth of movies.
But then I also have to read all three of the books.
No, three? I've got 15 of them here, and that's not the whole series.
I
got to
read the first three because the first two books made Mohadeeb to be like this hero when really he was an anti-hero, so I have to read Messiah to understand the changes that occurred in Dune 2 to make it more what Frank Herbert wanted.
You don't have to do any of that.
You gotta do all that. You can't watch Lord of the Rings without reading the books 12 times first.
I think most people who've seen the Lord of the Rings movies have never actually read the books.
Are you telling me people don't know how to read?
Yeah, people don't know how to read, but that's not why. Just people don't read.
That's a shame.
Yep.
Because reading the book explains the movie.
Or you could just watch the movie and enjoy it. I watched every single Harry Potter movie multiple times. I've never read the books. Probably never.
I've never seen the Harry Potters.
Yep. Or Hunger Games or Dune. You generally miss out on all the really good stuff. So
I've seen all the great movies like Hateful Eight.
That was good. I enjoyed that one.
Hateful Six.
That one doesn't
Hateful
exist.
Hateful 13.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Seventh Samurai.
Also a good one.
Seventh Samurai. The 17th Samurai.
And we're out of here. Bye, Craig.
13th G.I. Joe. Rambo 17, Blood for Blood. Rocky 9, This Time in a Casket. Lord of the Pills. The Transmuters.